There's more scientific evidence than ever these days that sugar is bad for us. Research has linked excess sugar consumption to obesity and a handful of chronic diseases, and some have suggested that sugar can even be physically addictive, much like tobacco or even hard drugs.
But just how did sugar become such a big part of our diets? Our next guest has written a comprehensive account of America's relationship with sugar, as well as how the substance flew under the radar for many years. He also makes the case that it may be time to start considering sugar as a drug rather than a food.
Gary Taubes joins us now. He's a science and health journalist and the co-founder of the Nutrition Science Initiative. He's written three books. His latest is called The Case Against Sugar. Gary, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Is it time to start rethinking sugar, not as a benign food additive, but as a harmful substance that needs more regulation?
Yeah, if ever there was a better late than never, this was the time. The argument I make in this book is that for a variety of reasons. I'm still trying to get over, by the way, the irony of coming after, you know, Tom Nichols discussing the death of expertise. So I'm about to explain why I think the experts were wrong for 100 years on sugar. We had embraced a series of beliefs about how diet affects our health. The last 50 years being that we should really worry about the fat in our diet, and therefore any food that's somehow low in fat, even, you know, yogurt, you take the fat out, you put sugar in, or high fructose corn syrup so that it's tasty and you could advertise it as a heart healthy diet food. And we just ignored the evidence against sugar throughout this period. The worst we ever said about it is it's the empty calories that you might consume in excess. And it just ignores an awful lot of kind of physiological reality about how this substance, sugar, affects our health.
But Gary, you do point out when you go through the history of how we've treated sugar, there were experts along the way who were sounding the alarm about sugar 100 years ago, even longer. Why did they get drowned out? And we pointed over the years toward other culprits when we look at unhealthy eating, obesity, chronic health conditions.
What we're trying to explain here and what you're describing is that when cultures, populations transition to Western diets, when they go from whatever they were eating, their traditional diets, to Western diets and lifestyles, when they become more affluent, when populations become urbanized, they experience these epidemics of obesity and diabetes. And diabetes, the numbers are particularly startling because you go, for instance, in the U.S. in the late 19th century, say the decade after the Civil War, you could go to major hospitals in major American cities like Philadelphia or Boston, and they could go an entire year without seeing a case of diabetes diagnosed. And today, 1 in 11 Americans is diabetic, and this is just a shocking transition. And as researchers, as clinicians, public health authorities started to recognize this diabetes epidemic in the works in the U.S. or Europe in the 1920s, there was authorities saying, well, you know, one of the things that has changed dramatically is how much sugar we're consuming, and diabetes is a disorder of carbohydrate intolerance. You're either secreting too much insulin or not enough insulin to deal with the carbohydrates in the diet. Sugar's a carbohydrate, maybe sugar's the problem. And at first in the 1920s, we sort of swept that argument away based on, the very influential physician in Boston named Elliot Joslin, who had become the most famous diabetes specialist of the 20th century and just didn't really understand his biochemistry. So he didn't realize that sugar was fundamentally different from other carbohydrates like rice. And then in the 1960s, when very influential British and American nutritionists started suggesting that sugar again was an obvious culprit for diabetes and might cause heart disease as well, we were obsessively focusing on the fat in the diet. And despite the fact that this idea that dietary fat is a cause of heart disease was never confirmed in experimental trials, we put in motion the extraordinary public health efforts to get us all to eat the sort of low-fat diet that we've now grown up on. So it's just, I don't know how else to put it, uninformed experts pushing the wrong ideas and ignoring the obvious for a century.
Talking to Gary Taubes, author of the new book, The Case Against Sugar. Gary, lay out what we know now about the impact of sugar, not just on diabetes, on obesity, heart conditions, the whole gamut. What do we know more or less for certain about the impact of sugar?
Well, what we know for certain, yeah, my book is A Case Against Sugar, and as I say in the author's note, it's the prosecution's
right.
argument, because there's not a lot we know for certain. We could say what's highly likely or what's more or less likely. So when we're talking about sugars, and this has been one of the areas of confusion for a century, the sugar, the beet or cane sugar, high fructose corn syrup, these are nutrients that are half fructose. And so half of these molecules are glucose, which is the stuff of the carbohydrate that's in all starches and that we digest. We absorb it into our bloodstream. It raises blood sugar. Our physicians also often refer to blood sugar as blood glucose. And that's metabolized by every cell in the body for all intents and purposes. But half of these compounds are fructose. Fructose is the sweetest carb. It's what makes sugar sweet. And it happens to be metabolized almost exclusively in the liver. And what's particularly damning in this case is that type 2 diabetes is a disorder of insulin resistance. Not having a deficiency of the hormone insulin as in type 1 diabetes, the kind that usually is diagnosed in children, but it's having too much insulin in your system. And insulin resistance is believed to begin in the liver with liver insulin resistance, and it's believed by many researchers to begin with excess fat accumulation in liver cells. And we know that the fructose component of sugar, when you, in effect, dump it on the liver in high doses, the liver will convert it to fat. So then we have all these diseases that associate with insulin resistance. So not just obesity and type 2 diabetes is a disease of insulin resistance, but there's a new disorder called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is epidemic in America today. And 30 years ago, if you were diagnosed with liver disease and you told your doctor that you didn't drink, if you were diagnosed with fatty liver and you told your doctor you didn't drink, your doctor would assume that you were lying to them and that only alcohol consumption caused fatty liver. Then fatty liver started showing up in children who clearly didn't drink, and the obvious culprit there, once again, is sugar consumption and sugary beverages. Obesity and diabetes are associated with heart disease, with excess risk of stroke, cerebrovascular disease, with cancer, and with Alzheimer's. And all these diseases are intimately related, once again, to this condition called insulin resistance. And like I said, insulin resistance, if you had to pick a culprit, a single prime suspect, it would clearly be our sugar consumption. And if sugar causes insulin resistance, then it either causes or at least increases our risk of all these other diseases.
Gary, just a few moments left. As the prosecutor in the case against sugar, what do we need to change? What has to happen with sugar?
Well, you know, if we go back to the early 19th century in the U.S. when diabetes and obesity were rare disorders, or you go back even, say, 50 years in Asia when diabetes and obesity were very rare disorders, sugar consumption was maybe one-tenth what it is today. Sugar and sweets were luxuries. They weren't something you consumed from the moment you woke up in your morning glass of orange juice or in the sugar you put in your coffee and tea. To the moment you went to sleep after dessert, they were something you consumed, you know, a couple times a week as a treat. I don't know if we can ever get back to that. Clearly, sugar has saturated our lives, and it's something, it's how we communicate love and happiness and joy, all the everything that Coca-Cola and PepsiCo commercials communicate on TV during sporting events. But
and we'll leave it there. Out of time, Gary Taubes, thanks for joining us. Gary Taubes' new book, he's a health journalist. He wrote the book, The Case Against Sugar.
Coming up, a legal ethics expert talks about calls for U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.